We're continuing Chapter 12, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. And we were at just about to do the sorting. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, McGonagall is calling out their names. Ackerley Stewart! A boy walked forward, visibly trembling from head to foot, picked up the sorting hat, put it on, and sat down on the stool. Ravenclaw! Shouted the hat. Stuart Ackerley took off the hat and hurried into a seat at the Ravenclaw table where everyone was applauding him. Harry caught a glimpse of Cho, the Ravenclaw seeker, cheering Stuart Ackerley as he sat down. For a fleeting second, Harry had a strange desire to join the Ravenclaw table also.
No dirty comments.
Fine, but he was thinking that. Barak, Malcolm. Slytherin. The table on the other side of the hall erupted with cheers. Harry could see Malfoy clapping as Baddock joined the Slytherins. Harry wondered whether Baddock knew that Slytherin House had turned out more dark witches and wizards than any other. See, that's so stupid. Fred and George hissed Malcolm Baddock as he sat down. Don't be mean to the poor kid. That's why they turn out all nasty, you know? Mm-hmm. Branstone Eleanor. Hufflepuff. Caldwell Owen. Hufflepuff. Creevy Dennis. Tiny Dennis Creevy staggered forward, tripping over Hagrid's moleskin, just as Hagrid himself sidled up into the hall through a door behind the teacher's table. About twice as tall as a normal man and at least three times as broad, Hagrid, with his long, wild, tangled black hair and his beard looking slightly alarming. A misleading impression. Oh, sorry, looked slightly alarming. A misleading impression, for Harry, Ron, and Hermione knew Hagrid to possess a very kind nature. He winked at them as he sat down on the end of the table and watched Dennis Creevy putting on the sorting hat. The rip at the brim opened wide. Gryffindor! The hat shouted. Hagrid clapped along with the Gryffindors as Dennis Creevy, beaming widely, took off the hat and placed it on the stool and hurried over to join his brother. Colin, I fell in, he said shrilly, throwing himself into an empty seat. It was brilliant, and something in the water grabbed me and pushed me back into the boat. Cool, said Colin, just as excitedly. It was probably the giant squid, Dennis. Wow, said Dennis, as though nobody in their wildest dreams could hope for more than being thrown into a storm-tossed, fathoms-deep lake and being pushed out again by a giant sea monster. Dennis, see that boy down there, the one with the black hair and glasses? See him? Know who he is, Dennis? Harry looked away, staring very hard into the sorting hat, now sorting Emma Dobbs. The sorting continued, boys and girls with varying degrees of fright on their faces. Moving one by one to the four-legged stool, the line dwindling slowly as Professor McGonagall passed the elves. Oh, hurry up, Ron moaned, massaging his stomach. Now, Ron, the sorting's much, much more important than food, said nearly headless Nick, as madly Laura became a Hufflepuff. Of course it is, if you're dead, snapped Ron. I do hope this year's batch of Gryffindors are up to scratch, said nearly headless Nick, applauding as McDonald Natalie joined the Gryffindor table. We don't want to break our winning streak, do we? Gryffindor had won the Inter-House Championship for the last 3 years in a row, ever since Harry got there.
Mm-hmm.
Pritchard Graham, Slytherin, Quirky Orla, Ravenclaw, and finally with Whitby Kevin, Hufflepuff. The sorting ended. Professor McGonagall picked up the hat and the stool and carried them away. About time, said Ron, seizing his knife and fork and looking expectantly at his golden blade. Professor Dumbledore had gotten to his feet. He was smiling around at the students, and his arms opened wide in welcome. I have only two words to say to you, he told them, his deep voice echoing around the hall. Tuck in. Hear, hear, said Harry and Ron loudly, as the empty dishes filled
magically.
I think so, yeah. As the empty dishes filled magically with before their eyes. Nearly headless Nick watched mournfully as Harry, Ron, and Hermione loaded their own plates. Yeah, see, poor ghosts, right? They're better off not being ghosts. Ah, that's better, said Ron, with his mouth full of mashed potatoes. You're lucky there's a feast tonight at all, you know, said nearly headless Nick. There was trouble in the kitchen earlier. What happened? Said Harry, through a sizable chunk of steak. Peeves, of course, said nearly headless Nick, shaking his head, which wobbled dangerously. He pulled his ruff a little higher up on his neck. The usual argument, you know. He wanted to attend the feast. Well, it's quite out of the question, you know. What would he's like, utterly uncivilized, can't see a plate of food without throwing it? We held a ghost's council. The fat friar was all for giving him a chance, but most wisely, in my opinion, the Bloody Baron put his foot down. The Bloody Baron was the Slytherin ghost, a gaunt and silent specter covered in silver blood stains. He was the only person at Hogwarts who could really control Peeves. Yeah, we thought Peeves seemed hacked off about something, said Ron darkly. What'd he do in the kitchens? Oh, the usual, nearly headless Nick said, shrugging. Wreaked havoc and mayhem, pots and pans everywhere, place swimming in soup. Terrified the house elves out of their wits. Clang. Hermione had knocked over her golden goblet. Pumpkin juice spreading steadily on the tablecloth, staining several feet of white-orange linen, but Hermione paid no attention. There are house elves here, she said, staring horror-struck at Nearly Headless Nick. Here at Hogwarts? Certainly, said Nearly Headless Nick, looking surprised at her. The largest number in any dwelling in Britain, I believe, over 100. I've never seen one, said Hermione. Well, they hardly ever leave the kitchen by day, do they? Said Nearly Headless Nick. They come out at night, do a bit of cleaning, set the fires and so on. I mean, you're not supposed to see them, are you? That's the mark of a good house elf, isn't it? That you don't know it's there? Hermione stared at him. But they get paid, she said. They get holidays, don't they? And sick leave and pensions and everything? Nearly Headless Nick chortled so much that his ruff slipped, and his head flopped off, dangling an inch or so of ghostly skin and muscle that still attached it to his neck. Sick leave and pensions, he said, pushing his head back onto his shoulder and securing it once more with his ruff. House elves don't want sick leave and pensions. Hermione looked down at her hardly touched plate of food, put her knife and fork down upon it, and pushed it away from her. Oh, come on, Hermione, said Ron, accidentally spraying Harry with bits of Yorkshire pudding. Oops, sorry. He swallowed. You won't get them sick leave by starving yourself. Slave labor, said Hermione, breathing hard through her nose. That's what made this dinner. Slave labor. And she refused to eat another bite. The rain was still drumming heavily against the high, dark glass. Another clap of thunder shook the windows, and the stormy ceiling flashed, illuminating the golden plates as the remains of the first course vanished and were replaced instantly with puddings. Treacle tart, Hermione, said Ron, deliberately wafting its smell toward her. Spotted Dick, look, wait, Spotted Dick. It's probably not good.
I think it's a kind of fish.
Oh, okay. Chocolate gâteau.
Or something.
No, yeah.
Spotted Dick, I don't know.
I'm sure it's not what I think it is.
No.
But Hermione gave him a look so reminiscent of Professor McGonagall that he gave up. When the puddings, too, had been demolished, and the last crumbs had faded off the plates, leaving them sparkling clean, Albus Dumbledore got to his feet again. The buzz of chatter filling the hall ceased almost at once, so that only the howling wind and pounding rain could be heard. So, said Dumbledore, smiling at them all again, now that we are all fed and watered, said Hermione, I must once more ask your attention while I give out a few notices. Mr. Filch? Mr. Filch, the caretaker, has asked me to tell you that the list of objects forbidden in the castle this year has been extended to include screaming yo-yos, fanged frisbees, ever-bashing boomerangs. The full list comprises some 437 items, I believe, and can be viewed in Mr. Filch's office if anybody would like to check. The corners of Dumbledore's mouth twitched. He continued. As ever, I would like to remind you all that the forest on the grounds is out of bounds to students, as is the village of Hogsmeade, to all below third year. It is also my painful duty to inform you that the Interhouse Quidditch Cup will not take place this year. What? Harry gasped. He looked at Fred and George, his fellow members on the Quidditch team. They were mouthing... soundlessly at Dumbledore, apparently too appalled to speak. Dumbledore went on. This is due to an event that will be starting in October and continuing through the school year, taking up much of the teacher's time and energy, but I am sure you will all enjoy it immensely. I have great pleasure in announcing that this year at Hogwarts... But at that moment, there was a deafening rumble of thunder and the doors of the great hall banged open. A man stood in the doorway, leaning upon a long staff, shrouded in black traveling coat. Every head in the great hall swiveled towards the stranger, and suddenly brightly illuminated by a fork of lightning that flashed across the ceiling. He lowered his head, shook out a long mane of grizzled dark hair, and then began to walk up toward the teacher's table. A dull clunk echoed through the hall on his every other step. He reached the end of the top table, turned right, and limped heavily toward Dumbledore. Another flash of lightning crossed the ceiling. Hermione gasped. The lightning had thrown the man's face into sharp relief, and it was a face unlike any other Harry had ever seen. It looked as though it had been carved out of weathered wood by someone who had only the vaguest idea of what a human face should look like, and was none too skilled with a chisel. Every inch of skin seemed to be scarred. The mouth looked like a diagonal gash, and a large chunk of the nose was missing. But it was the man's eyes that made him most frightening. One of them was a small, dark, and beady eye. The other was large and round, as a coin, and a vivid electric blue. The blue eye was moving ceaselessly, without blinking, and was rolling up and down from side to side quite independently of the normal eye. And then it rolled right over, pointing into the back of the man's head, so that all they could see was whiteness. The stranger reached Dumbledore. He stretched out a hand that was badly as scarred as his face, and Dumbledore shook it, muttering words Harry couldn't hear. He seemed to be making some inquiry of the stranger, who shook his head unsmilingly and replied in an undertone. Dumbledore nodded and gestured to the man to his empty seat to the right-hand side. The stranger sat down, shook his mane of dark hair out of his face, and pulled a plate of sausages toward him, raised it to what it was left of his nose, and sniffed it. He then took a small knife out of his pocket, speared a sausage on the end of it, and began to eat. His normal eye was fixed on the sausages, but his blue eye was still darting relentlessly around its socket, taking in the hall and the students. May I introduce our new Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher, said Dumbledore brightly to the silence, Professor Moody. It was usual for new staff members to be greeted with applause, but none of the staff or students clapped, except Dumbledore and Hagrid, who both put their hands together and applauded, but the sound echoed dismally into the silence and they stopped fairly quickly. Everyone else seemed to be too transfixed by Moody's bizarre appearance to do anything more than stare at him. Moody, said Harry to Ron. Mad-Eye Moody, the one your dad went to help this morning? Must be, said Ron in a low voice. What happened to him? Hermione whispered. What happened to his face? Dunno, said Ron, watching Moody with fascination. Moody seemed totally indifferent to his less than warm welcome. Ignoring the jug of pumpkin juice in front of him, he reached again into his traveling cloak, pulled out a hip flask, and took a long draught from it. As he lifted his arm to drink, his cloak was pulled a few inches from the ground, and Harry saw, below the table, several inches of carved wooden leg ending in a clawed foot. Dumbledore cleared his throat. As I was saying, he said, smiling to the sea of students before him, all of whom were still gazing transfixed at Mad-Eye Moody, we are to have the honor of hosting a very exciting event over the coming months, an event that has not been held for over a century. It is my very great pleasure to inform you that the Triwizard Tournament will be taking place at Hogwarts this year. You're joking, said Fred Weasley loudly. The tension that had filled the hall ever since Moody's arrival suddenly broke. Nearly everyone laughed, and Dumbledore chuckled appreciatively. I am not joking, Mr. Weasley, he said, though now that you mention it, I did hear an excellent one over the summer about a troll, a hag, and a leprechaun, who all went to a bar. Professor McGonagall cleared her throat loudly. But maybe not this time, no, said Dumbledore. Where was I? Ah, yes, the Triwizard Tournament. Well, some of you will not know what this tournament involves, so I hope those of you who do know will forgive me for giving a short explanation to allow their attention to wander freely. And I think we'll stop there. And next time we'll hear the details of the Triwizard Tournament. I hope you like that, my kitten. Now you can go to sleep. Because you're so cute and curled up like a little tiger. I love you so much. Sleep well, boo.